Extra, extra, extra! Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. My name is Randy.
My name is Jared, and that was a very extra opening, Randy.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
It'll all make sense later, I promise, much as like what this show is all about. Don't worry, it'll make sense later, and it'll haunt you for the rest of eternity.
Cool.
So who the heck are we? I should say that we're big anime fans, have always been that way. My name, like I said before, is Randy. I currently do another podcast called We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z, with my buddy Doug. We, of course, talk about Dragon Ball, all things this and that about it. But I'm a big, big anime fan. I've always have been. And Jared has been a good friend of mine for, oh, geez, man, like what, 9, 10 years, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I think it's getting close to around 10 years. You know, I'm still caught up on your intro here where you said that this series is going to haunt me for the rest of my life.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It turns out I tend to like anime that does that to me. You know, what's like Evangelion and maybe a more recent anime like Made in Abyss. A series that just haunts me every day. So, yeah, it makes no sense now. We just watched those first two episodes, but I if it's going to haunt me for the rest of my life, then I think I'm in for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll be definitely a trip.
Yes.
And like I said, we've known each other for a while. We actually had a couple of podcasts before in the past, in a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were co-hosts of the Downpour podcast for oprainfall.com.
Mm-hmm.
You handled anime there, and I did some video games and anime stuff, but we also did it with our buddy Jonathan. Shout out to Jonathan if you're listening to this. Hey, buddy. But yeah, we've kind of got some experience, so hopefully this turns out well. I've got my fingers crossed. There's passion behind it, and I feel like that is enough to make it engaging.
Yeah, we did the Downpour podcast. We did the Backwards Compatible podcast for a while.
That's right.
We did a few one-off recordings that have been possibly lost to time, like a three-hour Evangelion 3.33 podcast that is gone.
Right.
Forever.
We tried looking for it because it'd be fun to dive back into that, especially after the fourth movie has come out. But
so,
c'est la vie.
But
we're not here to talk about that, right? We're here to talk about this other show, this new to you show, Revolutionary Girl Utena. Now, you have never seen this before, is that right?
That is correct. I did see the first episode once a number of years ago. I have a memory of the day. I have a memory of watching this at a completely different house that I'm living in now. So it was a long time ago. But other than that, I remember some of the vibes of the first episode, but I never continued for some reason. I don't think I was turned off from Utena. It was just more, maybe I was watching a few other things at the time. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of how life goes. We fall off the wagon for this thing or that thing for other stuff, and that's how it is. But I'm here to drag you back up onto that wagon.
Thank God someone is there to to pull me out of the mud. You know, I fell off. I was dragging in the mud for a while. Only my pinky was holding on, and you just are the heavenly light. You're like Vaughn from Escaflowne. Just the angel feathers are coming down on me and you're pulling my hand up. I thank you so much.
That's beautiful. I love how you interweave all of these anime references to make sure that people know that you're the real deal. And I like that.
I'm into hot anime. So this is anime is all around us. And you know, this is where we're
it's
at.
It's the force that binds us together.
So I feel like we're at the beginning of our trip in our Utena wagon, and I'm not sure how far away we are from our destination, but I'm glad that someone picked me up out of the mud. I still can't see out of my eyes. There's just too much dirt, but this is great.
Soon you will be bathed in the darkness of the light.
Thank you.
which is, the reference to the show. So speaking of the show, the goal of this podcast, this is not going to be a podcast that goes on for all eternity. We're going to be going through the whole show in the film of Revolutionary Girl Utena, and that's going to be it. We're going to go through the episodes, we're going to review those, and we're going to talk about the movie, and then this will just be a thing that'll be around all the time that you want to come to and think about Utena and listen to a couple of peeps talk about it. It'll be fun. And if you have never seen this show, I have good news for you. It's very easy to watch. Nozomi Entertainment, who put the show out here in the West, has kindly put it all up in Japanese with subtitles on YouTube. Everything except for the movie. That you might have to spring for by paying some money here and there to get a DVD or the Blu-ray. But it's all there. It's also on Funimation now. So if you pay for that, the TV series is there. I'm not sure about the movie. But otherwise, you can pick up the said DVDs and Blu-rays anywhere that you can buy your anime. Rightstuff.com, Amazon, all the good stuff. It'll be a trip. You should enjoy it. And it's free to try and see if it's going to be your bag, which is really great.
So Nozomi put this on YouTube, like the whole series?
The whole series, yep. If you just go to their channel, you can go to like their playlists, you can find it in there. If you just search for like Revolutionary Girl Utena Episode 1, it's going to be like the first thing that pops up.
Wow, so. It's amazing what we can do with the internet nowadays.
Right, things have changed. Even from back when we did our previous podcast. I mean,
yeah. Crunchyroll and stuff like was around hot then, anime but... from the 90s. Hot anime from the 90s just right through YouTube. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's great. We live in a wondrous place where you can just do that instead of shelling out $30 to $40 for a VHS or a DVD that has three episodes on it. Mm-hmm. And then do that in perpetuity for... Yes. Some shows. It's a good time. But let's try and dive into this. So we're starting, of course, at the beginning, at episode one, which is called The Rose Bride. And this show started airing April 2nd, 1997. So that is, of course, when the first episode aired. The last episode, which I'll let you know, there are 39 episodes, aired until December 24th, 1997. So a nice Christmas Eve gift is the ending of this TV series. And the movie followed in August 14th, 1999.
You know, Randy, there's not much I'd rather be doing than sitting in Japan with my Christmas girlfriend, eating my Christmas cake, yes, with some KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, watching the ending of Utena, this apparently haunting anime. It seems like, are you telling me that this is a Christmas-themed anime?
No. It's not a Christmas-themed anime. It just happens to have aired on Christmas. There's a big difference. Well, although, I guess it does give you gifts. It gives you gifts of entertainment and of
that's what I like experience. To hear. Anything that gives, yes, me a gift like that on Christmas Eve with my KFC and Christmas cake, I just can't, you know, wish for anything more.
Of course. What more could one want other than quality 90s anime, KFC, and cakey? So I think even if you've watched before, I think it's good to just have a nice refresher of what each episode is. So we're going to read a short synopsis so that way you're on the same page, we're on the same page, and it'll all go well. Now, Jared, would you like to be the one to read the episode one summary, or would you like me to do that?
I have my own summary that I just took while we watched the first episode.
Well, why don't you give yours, and then I'll give the full one.
Yeah, the scent of roses makes her think of the past. Mm. That's mostly the summary. We met a few characters along the way. We met the Rose Bride. I'm going to say her name as Anthy, even though in Japanese it sounds like they're saying Anshi.
Anshi.
Yes. We met Sionji. He's a real heck of a guy.
Real piece of work.
I labeled him Green Guy. But he's the bad guy. Wakaba, who has a crush. And Toga. Then, after all of that happens, there's an entrance scene with the water and Utena's ring. And by the power of Dios, Anthy summons the power and pulls a sword out of her chest. Well, actually, Sionji does that. And there's a duel. That's what, yes, happened.
That is what happened. That is the stream of consciousness of Jared as he ingests the first episode.
Yes.
I'll give a little more. I'll fill it out a bit more. Does that sound great. Okay?
Yeah, no, that sounds amazing.
Okay. So episode one, The Rose Bride. Utena Tenjo is a schoolgirl in the 8th grade of Otori Academy. She has the strange memory that, when she was very young, she met a mysterious prince and was given a ring with a rose signet. One day, Utena finds guys are making fun of a letter somebody posted, and she finds it was written by her best friend, Wakaba, for the captain of the kendo club, Sionji. For the sake of her best friend, Utena challenges Sionji to a duel. Then, Sionji tells her to come to the forest of the duel arena, which of course, they duel, Utena wins, and suddenly, Utena finds herself to be engaged to the Rose Bride, Anthy. And that is how we start this show. We throw you in, and I know
And she leaves, Utena leaves the duel and the school, well, wherever they had that duel, inside a big tree, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
She leaves that whole area saying, well, that was a strange day. I'm just going to try to forget about it. Not realizing that she is now apparently engaged and won a duel or went into a fight with someone using a real sword. Not just a wooden sword. A real, shiny sword.
For a character to say, wow, what a rough day after something or a strange day after all of that. Your day-to-day life must be pretty intense. It's quite a strange start indeed. I'm not sure if this is her first day at Otori Academy or merely towards the start. She does already know Wakaba. Wakaba is a schoolmate who claims that Utena is her boyfriend. As we know from watching, of course, that Utena is not like... I hate to say this. She's not your typical girl. Mm.
She is wearing clothing, a school uniform that usually a guy would wear. Not that I would have ever known that, seeing images of Utena over the years. For so long, I just thought that was like a normal outfit, but apparently that's a male uniform.
Which is also strange, because she mentions that it's the male uniform worn by the boys here at Otori Academy, but... she's wearing red and black, but all of the students there wear green and white. So I'm not sure where she got that uniform from, if it's from a past school and she's just allowed to keep wearing it, a la Makoto from Sailor Moon, who can't get a regular school uniform at her new school because she's too tall and they don't make uniforms in her size.
See, my guess is that she just got it from her dad, and her dad has something to do with this if he's still alive. So,
well, in the first 30 seconds of the show, we find out her parents are dead, and she meets the prince who gives her the strength to keep on going.
This is why I have you in my life, to remind me that the parents are dead. But it doesn't mean she didn't inherit that clothing.
That's true. This could be a passed down family heirloom of boys' school uniforms that perfectly fit 14-year-old girls.
Yes.
That's just how anime works. I think it's important to go over kind of where this show came from, because it'll inform a lot about what you know about it if you're familiar with the people behind it. So the big person behind this is a man named Kunihiko Ikuhara. And if you're a fan of Sailor Moon, you'll know him as the guy who was the director and kind of headed the first three seasons of Sailor Moon. He also directed the first Sailor Moon movie, which, spoiler alert, is pretty gay. And I don't, of course, mean that in a pejorative form. It's a lot of gay-coded characters and same-sex relationships. And, of course, Utena has that in spades. I mean, obviously, we have Wakaba, a girl who calls Utena a girl, her boyfriend. Mm. And they have a relationship. By the end of this episode, Utena is now engaged to another girl named Anthy. But he's kind of a big deal. He's a strange, I'll say eccentric man in that he does go to conventions to talk about his stuff. Usually he's dressed as Sailor Mars, the full outfit, the heels and everything.
I did not know that.
Yes. Him and as well as the other director of Sailor Moon at the time, that man dresses up as Sailor Venus and they go to cons together. They are not in a relationship, but they are both clearly meant to be the best of friends, which I think is great.
I did not know that about this. And it's actually nice to hear some of these details about Sailor Moon because I am not too familiar with Sailor Moon material myself beyond just seeing the series that came out a few years ago. About 13 mm-hmm. episodes, kind of like a retelling, or like a remake that's very pretty looking. But I saw some of that, but I have not seen much more. So I had no idea that the creators go to conventions like that, which is great.
Yeah, it's super great. Well, you say you're not familiar with Sailor Moon other than Crystal,
right?
Which was that remake series that more adapts the manga. Perhaps you have heard of or are familiar with some of his other works after Utena, because he left Sailor Moon to start B-Papas and do Utena, as well as start some other projects of his own. Mm. His other ones after this include things like Penguin Drum. We also have another series called Yurikuma Arashi, which would translate as Lesbian Bear Storm. and his most recent one, which is Sarazanmai, which is, I have not seen Sarazanmai yet, which is kind of interesting in that it actually has a male lead. It's not usually his style. It's usually women who are kind of leading the charge for his series. But did you ever watch Yurikuma Arashi or Penguin Drum, Jared?
No, I have heard of Penguin Drum, but I've not seen either of those.
I would definitely, if you like Utena, then I would recommend it. Penguin Drum is really good. I need to sit down and watch it again. Yurikuma Arashi, intensely amazing. It's only like 13 episodes. It's fantastic. It was actually airing, I believe, when we were doing our previous podcast. So it's relatively recent. It's all good stuff. Ikuhara is a madman. I often joke that, you know, he doesn't make anime all the time. I believe that he finishes a series and then he retreats into a cocoon chrysalis. And he only emerges when he has new stories to tell that can only be born from his mind. He's a very, very interesting person, and I'm glad to have him have the freedom to make all this stuff. He's definitely a very unique creator.
That sounds good. It sounds like what you're saying is he hasn't been restricted over time by having to make like certain series just for the money of it. I mean,
right.
It sounds like he's had a lot of creative freedom over the years.
Yes, absolutely. Which is really great. He really shines through in everything he makes, so long as, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is your jam. Thankfully, it is for me. So I have a wealth of great projects from him to enjoy. So he is the series director for this series. He also directs a few episodes here and there. But of course, one man cannot make anime alone. We've got a really great team. So I want to go over this first episode real quick. This episode is actually storyboarded by Ikuhara himself, which is pretty great. Wanted to start on the right foot. The episode itself was directed by a man named Toru Takahashi. He was a storyboarder for Neon Genesis Evangelion, which you might have heard of. Another series called Chihayafuru, which I believe you're familiar with. Is that correct?
I am. I adore Chihayafuru, even though I believe at this point I'm a little bit behind. But I've seen the two seasons of Chihayafuru that had premiered. I believe more has been made. I almost had the opportunity to see the Chihayafuru live action movie in Japan, and it did not work out that day. But Evangelion, very familiar, obviously. Chihayafuru looks like storyboarder for Death Note, City Hunter,
yes,
and more.
And many, many more. So he has been part of the industry for a long time, and it still continues to be a big part of it. Other staff include the writer for this episode, which was by Yoji Enokido, who, from what I've looked at on the staff list, he writes a lot of the episodes. He might be the head writer for the whole series. I'm not entirely sure. But he also has quite a pedigree. He was a scriptwriter for, again, Evangelion. he continued to write scripts for the rebuild of Evangelion movies. He did another show called Razaphon, which a lot of people equate with Evangelion. You can see a pattern here. He is also a scriptwriter for Sailor Moon, Fooly Cooly, Gunbuster, and Bungo Stray Dogs. So quite a bit under his belt. There's many, many more. Same thing for Toru Takahashi and other people I want to talk about. But I just figured I'd pick out a few choice things that I think people would have heard of or that you would have heard of, Jared.
Yeah, and when you see this much talent going into a series and you see some of the things that they worked on before and after this particular series, then you can start to piece together the quality an episode and why it flows the way it does.
Exactly. It's nice to know these things because, I don't know about you, in my younger years for as an anime fan, I didn't really know about different studios, different animators, directors, so on and so forth. But over time, I got more acquainted with it, and learning some of these more behind-the-scenes things, it can point you in some good directions. If you have a series that you really, really love, take a look and see who's in that cast, in that in the crew list, and take a look and see what else they've done. That might be a show that's right up your alley and could open you up to a lot more new and cool stuff. Moving forward, animation supervisor for this episode was Shinya Hasegawa. He did key animation for, surprise, Evangelion. Mm-hmm. I'm going to highlight that every time it shows up because I feel that this show shares a lot with that series and is actually how I talked you into sitting down to watch this, because I know that
something you're like that, yes,
a big fan. besides Evangelion, he did Dragon Ball Z. Yo, shout out to my other podcast. Sailor Moon, not a surprise. Pokemon and El Hazard, as well, again, countless other things. But one of the other big important parts of this show, I believe, is the music. All of the background music for the show was Shinkichi Mitsumune, who did shows like Amagi Brilliant Park, Fooly Cooly, Negima, with an exclamation point. I know that there's a difference because sometimes there's a question mark, and I think that's the TV series, and the exclamation point is the OVA series. I might be wrong. He also did Rosen Maiden and a bunch of Yu-Gi-Oh! Music.
Mm-hmm.
He's been sticking with that series for a long time. But the dual themes, which we have at least, you know, usually kind of one per episode, is actually done by somebody else. This person is credited as J.A. Caesar, who did other things like insert song composition for Madoka Magica Side Story, which is interesting because while we were watching... I think it was the first duel you... Or no, it was the opening. You had brought up that it's like got a Calafina vibe. Is that right?
I yeah, some of the songs have a Calafina-like vibe where they flow, but they're not as we were talking. It's not as haunting or it's hard to actually explain the difference between them, but it has a certain vibe that's similar.
So that's out of the way. It's a lot of info. As we go on and we get to new episodes, we'll have repeating cast and crew. I'm not going to go through everything each time. And I'll say, hey.
Well, as you've been saying, I mean, something that's happened with me over the years, too, is I've started following a few different accounts through Twitter and also through Facebook, Instagram, where you start to follow they'll post different clips of a series or different production artwork, and they'll actually point out who the animation director was. Or sometimes it's a mystery, they actually post like a different cuts from series, and you start to really become interested in like who did this cut and et cetera. So Randy, what I'm trying to say is, as we continue watching this series, I'll expect you to know who the animation supervisor was and who the animation corrections, you know, who did those animation corrections for each scene. If we're going to do any type of trivia, I'll just ask you that.
Oh, perfect. You'll be like, can you tell me who drew the cut of Sionji at 16:24:22?
Yes.
And I'll be like, oh, okay, yes, I can drop that right off of my dome without looking it up.
Thank you.
I make no promises that is not happening.
Thank you. But yeah, I do see this with the staffing of what you put. I mean, Evangelion came out, looks like, relatively... Well,
it was 95, and this series was 97.
So you have to wonder what they worked on within that time frame, and I know we could go dig that up, but they definitely... Looks like they kind of stuck together a little bit and continued working together, which is cool to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ikuhara put together a wonderful team for this series, which is just so very, very impressive. But we've talked a lot about the show in general. We talked about what happens in the first episode. I want to hear what your impressions were. I've seen this show before. I've seen this episode multiple times as I've tried to introduce it to many other friends. So far to no avail, it hasn't stuck yet. So I'm hoping to get you here. So when you watched this first episode, tell me what you thought about it. What sort of notes did you take while engaging with this?
Well, the notes that I took were my episode summary that I started with.
Oh, of course.
But,
right.
But the things that stood out to me, the first thing in particular was the detail within all of the backgrounds and the cell layering, the frames that they would put over different backgrounds and different characters being introduced was interesting, and had flowers coming through. Not every anime did that back in the day. Not every anime does that now. Only particular series would have moving backgrounds like that, and it kind of sets a certain tone or a vibe that kind of gives it kind of, you know, a fun or an interesting vibe.
Right.
So that stood out to me. The another thing that stood out to me was some of the movement was done really well when it comes to like a character moving, you know, on in the foreground, and you have the background moving. The animation, basically, the animation seems to be top notch throughout. A lot of different art assets are used. I know some of them look like they were repeated a bit, but they definitely had the effort to keep creating more and more. So it stood out to me. If I were to talk about some of the story elements beyond just like what we visually saw, I found that Utena is saying that the scent of roses makes her think of the past. We don't really know much about what's going on, and it definitely seems like that's on purpose. Like, the first episode is pretty wild when you think about it. I could see how if someone's new to this series, you take a look at it and there's things that happen for 20 some odd minutes, but you there's no indication of what's really happening. And with Utena at the end of the episode going through the school, going through the you know, the tree, and having that moment happening, going up and there's a floating castle, but then to leave at the end of the episode and say, well, that was an interesting day, type of mood. You know, it's very curious of what is actually happening. So no real details were provided except for some lingo and, you know, a very interesting scene with the school council. You know, but it's like we get this quick introduction, but only a few things are really striking, like Seonji, Mr. Green bad guy. Seonji is a real something or other. Who slaps Anthy way too many times. But so it's like certain things definitely stood out. So it's it was nice to have it lead into a second episode where they at least casually mentioned those things again. Not much explanation, but a casual mentioning of terms. So it's quite an opener, I will say. It's like the staff had very much a strong plan of what they wanted to get across within this first episode, and it hits those notes. But there's so much that feels like it's missing currently.
Yeah, that's one of the things about this show is it's remarkable planning, both in terms of its story and its production. So you had brought up setting some interesting tone with going all out in animation for like moving backgrounds and things like that. This show was made on not a very high budget, but Ikuhara, who came off of Sailor Moon, learned quite a bit of nice tricks to make things work, even if you've got a smaller budget. Of course, same with the people who worked on Evangelion, which had a very small budget for what it did. One of Ikuhara's big tricks that was used a lot in Sailor Moon is bank animation. So they will animate something to a very high degree, and they will use that over and over and over again to help illustrate a theme in the story, while also saving time that, okay, well, we didn't have to animate that 30 seconds again because we've done that before. I know that we are only two episodes in into watching it, but the ascension to the dueling arena is something you're going to see a lot. Same thing with what happens later with Utena's sort of transformation. But what is really great that Ikuhara does, besides just using that to save time and effort, is that he's very good at playing with your expectations when using bank animation. So I will just say, keep on your toes, even if you see something that you've seen 20 times already, keep on a lookout. There are some interesting things that'll pop up. In doing that, you're able to kind of save your time and your money for, I guess, the money shots, if you want to put it that way. The duels are definitely a big section of that that have a lot of really great character acting and movement. We've got a lot of excess animation detail with skirts and long hair and interesting camera angles that just kind of all comes together really well. And forgive me if I'm speaking too much here, but I wanted to answer kind of the things that you had brought up. you had talked about, you know, this is a lot happening in one day, and a lot of information that we're left with, a lot of mystery and unanswered questions. If you weren't scheduled to sit and watch the show and record a podcast about it, after watching this first episode here, would you be inclined to watch the next episode right off the bat?
Likely, yes.
Hmm.
Although it didn't happen years ago for some reason. It's a mystery. But likely, yes. Definitely seems like it's something where it's kind of wild enough where I'd want to know what's actually happening here and to see more of like what's happening, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a basic way of putting it, but it's intriguing enough to keep the brain active, to want to know, like to be curious about this strange student council. A very strange moment of a castle, like literally in the sky, just spinning upside down. I'm a little bit interested in Utena's background and this whole prince deal. So there's certain things there that they vaguely speak of, and then chunks of the day flies by, and then all of a sudden we're literally at the end of an episode, and you know, it's like wait. What else happened here? How did she get actually through this? And so, yeah.
Right. We're kind of coming at this show, obviously, at a different time. The show was made in 97. We're watching this with 2021 eyes.
Whoa.
Something that is a big part of the show is about our relationships we have between characters, especially ones of the same sex.
Mm.
We have Utena and Wakaba, who are clearly in some sort of relationship. Utena refers to her as her best friend. Wakaba claims that Utena is her boyfriend. Utena has no problem with her saying this. And then, of course, we are engaged to Anthy at the end. But, of course, we don't really have a budding relationship between those two and what their whole thing is like. What do you think about this? Is it an interesting angle to go for this story, especially something in 1997 for Japanese anime? Or what are your feelings off the bat about it? What do you think?
I'm not too surprised to see, you know, anything like this as an anime series, because it's mm-hmm. commonly found throughout many, many series. Another thing that I have heard over the years, and it's hard for me to pick any one instance, but this show is referenced a lot for being, I don't know how else to say it, but like a gay anime, a very heavily themed anime, that, especially between the two girls, between Utena and Anthy. Like, I've seen a lot of artwork, a lot of either actual right. promotional artwork or fan art over the years. So I'm very familiar with seeing it. And I've heard a lot about it, just kind of absorbing from the anime universe those details. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised. I think it's interesting that Utena basically, you know, as wearing a male uniform and has certain lines that sound like she either wants to be a prince or says that she will be a prince. There's that. There's also, I know I'm kind of skipping into episode two, but Anthy says that, you know, she's engaged now to Utena, and that doesn't seem to faze Utena much. It's like, it kind of goes right over her head. Like, I just feel like she really has no idea what she's getting herself into. Like, there's some secret, obviously, that the show is hiding from us so far. And, you know, just based on the scent of roses that makes me think of the past. That's just like a one line kind of hook. But it's definitely interesting. I think I feel bad for Wakaba, because I feel like, see, I don't know how dark this show gets, but I feel like something bad's going to happen to her. Or I just feel like she's going to be that side character that just is slightly heartbroken. Like, I wonder how long the series will focus on her. Or maybe she'll become a villain. Maybe she'll join, you know, the school clubs of whatever I'm trying to get at here.
right.
To duel. You know, maybe there will be a love triangle. I have no idea where this show goes, so I'm very interested to see it.
It's very hard to predict where it's going to go, I will tell you that much.
Yeah, based off of what we have so far, I have no... If you were to ask me predictions, I would say more duels, and that's it so far.
Yeah. I do want to bring up something that I had only learned about today while doing some research for this show. As I said before, Ikuhara had left working on Sailor Moon to start this sort of production studio and make this show. It was set from the start to be a larger sort of media project. So the manga actually came out for Utena and started in 96, with the anime starting in 97. So they were worked on concurrently. Ikuhara working with a mangaka, I believe her name is Chie Sato. I'll have to double check to make sure that that's correct. But one of the big problems they ran into early on is that while working through it, Ikuhara told her about the character relationships that will be showing up, such as Utena and Anthy. And unfortunately, the person he chose to do the manga, Miss Sato, is extremely homophobic and did not like that idea in the least.
Did not
and
know said that.
That if they make it super gay, she quits. So in order to not have the entire production fall apart, Ikuhara let it be a bit more subtle than he initially wanted to, so that he could keep a hold of her to keep working on the manga side of things. If you've ever read the manga, I know that obviously, Jared, you haven't. I haven't myself either, but my husband has, and he said it's not very good. One of the reasons being, it's not gay at all. So we have no those character dynamics in the manga at all, because of her views, which is a bummer.
I will say this, that I'm finding that Chie Sato is a well-known Japanese voice actress, so I believe there must be a different name that we'll have to look up and get back to. But that's interesting that you point that out. Like, that's a hardship of working within community of work, because that person probably already signed the agreement. You know, it's like it's all contractual. There's a lot of money behind this stuff to build a media franchise, and to have to hide that amount of work, that's it's fairly interesting. That doesn't match the vision at all. So, is this anime series kind of an adaptation of this, or was this a little bit more separate, where the director, or I'm sorry, the writer would be able to basically be more free with how gay they want to make it?
So it was done concurrently. It's just that the manga came out first.
Right.
So they were both working on at the same time, just kind of different versions of the story. So one product could sell the other. It's kind of the deal there. But yeah, it's a very interesting production for this. I want to move on to the second episode because, you know, we have a bunch of stuff to cover here.
Sure.
Is there anything you want to say before we move on to that?
No, that is it.
Okay.
I was looking at my notes for episode two, and my summary is even better than episode one.
Oh, well then please regale us.
Okay, here is the summary for episode two. To smash the world's shell. Letters from the end of the world. Revolution to the world by winning duels and becoming engaged to the Rose Bride. And something about the code of the Rose Seal. And that is what I got from episode two. Let me
that,
be clear.
That definitely encompasses a lot more. It is a mysterious entity that is sending them information, and apparently this entity also keeps track of what is happening. In that end of the world had sent them the information that Sionji had lost the duel. Toga knew as he was there, but everybody else is informed via these letters. And it's all very mysterious and really sort of piles things on. This episode also gives us a few more answers. But before we start rolling into that, I'm going to give the full synopsis of this, even though your notes were great, I just want to say.
Oh, thank you.
Episode 2 is For Whom the Rose Smiles. Winning the duel with Sionji, Utena is now the victor of the duel and is to be engaged to the Rose Bride, who is Anthy. The next day, Utena and Anthy start living together in a dorm. Sionji, who is actually really in love, asks Anthony to get back on good terms with him, but Anthy refuses. Then he challenges Utena to a rematch. Feeling this whole thing is just crazy, Utena decides to lose the duel on purpose. She goes to fight Sionji, and amongst things happening, including the emergence of the spirit of Dios, she defeats Sionji, even though she had said that she would lose on purpose. And now they can continue to live together in their dorm for now. You had brought up in your notes something very specific. Your very first thing was about cracking the world's shell.
Yes.
Which is something that Toga either recites or reads from as he and the rest of the student council are taking an elevator to presumably their meeting balcony where they play cards and drink tea, as fancy gentlemen and women do. This thing that he says is actually a reference to some classic literature. Could I read you Ikuhara's commentary for this episode where he explores that?
Sure. Because it's
some very interesting stuff.
Sounds good.
Okay. The bird fights his way out of the egg. The egg is the world. Who would be born must first destroy a world. The bird flies to God. That God's name is Abraxas. This is a quote from Hermann Hesse, who wrote a book, which is from, called Damien. He's a German author. This book was written in 1919. I bought this book and I read it yesterday on one day because I needed to know what all this information was. Ikuhara continues by saying, "When I was in middle school, my classmate, who is referenced as T here, recommended me a book by Hesse. He said, 'Inside this book is everything about me.' I didn't know what he was on about. However, that particular quote stuck with me. One day, long afterwards, T and I met up again after not seeing each other for over a decade, and I brought it up again. What was that again? He didn't even remember the book existed, let alone that he'd recommended it to me. To think he'd forget everything about himself. I wonder if Hesse wasn't needed in the world T lived in after middle school. In case, I wonder why I didn't forget. I experimentally added another passage to Hesse's. If we don't crack the world shell, we will die without being born. Smash the world shell for the revolution of the world." So clearly this book had a big influence on him that he read from a fellow student who told him to read it, and that it was everything about him. And then he just forgot about it. The person who said it was all for him. It's a very interesting book, I will say. It's short. You can find it on Audible. It's like, I don't know, 5 hours if you listen at 1.25 speed like I do. just about a boy growing up. And it also, I'm not sure if this was intended because of the time period, 1919, and I'm just reading into it what I want to. But I feel like it has a also a lot of gay undertones to it, in that the main character meets a new boy at school. He finds him to be very physically attractive and wanting to spend most of his time with him. Later on, he meets a woman and describes her as immensely attractive and boyish. So it seems that this is his type, which is cool. But again, I'm not sure if I'm reading into it what I want to read into it from this book from 1919. But yeah, the breaking the world shell is it's a striking idea, and it's very, I don't know, it sticks with you, at least I think so, especially with just how mysterious Toga is and this whole school council. Yeah, this episode also introduces us to the living situation that's going to be starting. Wakaba and Utena are not going to be sharing living in the same dorm building. Rather, Utena is going to be living in a different building, one that has been closed for 10 years, and it turns out that she is perhaps the only person who lives here, except for her roommate, who is now Anthy, because they are engaged, and it is not a coincidence. This is how it will be. If you are engaged to Anthy, you will live together, and this is how it'll be. I know I've been going on for a while, so I would like to know what you have to say.
One thing I will say is that book that you were recommending and that you were bringing up, I believe, so the manga author that you were talking about is very close to the name, or it is the name you said, Chiho Saito. Chiho Saito, most well known for Revolutionary Girl Utena. I'm going to have a feeling that she has not read that book. and I'm kind of glad I haven't heard of anything else she worked on, because I don't think I'd be interested in reading it. Or work on. So, but what you're saying, though, with that, with the school council, and they were talking very briefly about, like, the chick would die before, hatching out of the egg deal. They very briefly say that, and then so everything you said definitely finds its place into this anime. I'm sure that being so highly influenced by something, if it helps to form you as a collective person over the years, it'll come through in your work in some way or another. On top of that, when we think about just when you're going into like the actual episode there and their living situation, and we're talking about some of these themes where Utena doesn't seem to really fully comprehend what's going on, and Anthy's just living there with her. Anthy makes it pretty clear that, hey, I'm engaged to you, like I'm yours, baby, and Utena just does not, it just kind of goes over her head again, and they just think that she just thinks that it's just by coincidence, right? That they have been dormed together. But no, this is definitely not coincidence. So, plus, I mean, we have to bring up your favorite character, Choo Choo. So.
Choo Choo! How could we forget Choo Choo?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when you were giving the quick synopsis of this episode. I was like, where's our Choo Choo rocket, man?
I will say that these synopses are taken from the TV database, and they apparently chose to ignore Choo Choo's debut. I know, it Choo-choo, is a crime against humanity.
Choo Choo was stepped on. Okay, was stepped on by Seonji for like 30 seconds, okay? And I couldn't believe that. So I hope to see Choo-choo
with how he treats
evolve.
Anthy. Yeah, with how he treats Anthy, you really think that he wouldn't step on a small helpless creature?
I wonder if Seonji himself is a small helpless creature. So I feel like there's more to this
Jared.
Character. I think there's there's more to this character that we haven't even seen. That doesn't make up for anything that he has done. He's pretty abusive. Let's just make that really clear.
Of course.
But there's...
I don't know if you need to hear this, audience. Please do not slap women.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Please do not do that. Just because you lost a duel for this bride that you have had for some amount of time. I have a feeling that Seonji has some strange relationship with his brother and family or whatever is happening within this student council of how they are treating each other. It's kind of hard to tell the power dynamics at this point beyond our red-haired leader. So
right. We've only gotten very few lines from all of them. They're a small, tight-knit group. I know that they didn't go over everybody's names, but of course, Toga is there. His younger brother, Seonji, the very, very mean man. Mickey, who is the boy with blue hair and the stopwatch, and Juri, the woman with yellow, golden, spindly hair, are all part of the student council. And they will all play interesting parts as we go through. I should mention, in case you're listening to this and haven't watched the show, I don't know why, but Choo Choo is Anthy's best friend, and he is a small little purple monkey that lives with her. And he's adorable. I mean, the first time he meets Utena, he tries to eat some food, and it is too big and fills his throat, and now he can't breathe. He's about to die in front of Utena after just meeting her, which is very endearing. He also loves cake. He ran face first into some. He's not afraid to fight. He's a tiny little monkey, but he will fight Seonji with a fork. he's just so endearing.
Yeah, he's definitely there to smash the world's shell. So that is...
He is.
That is... I think there's something to that character of Choo Choo.
Or is he just another pen? We'll have to find out.
Or is he end of world writing letters?
Whoa. Dang.
I do have a theory. You know, I said earlier, if you were to ask me if I had any predictions, and I said, well, it would just be some extra duels. There has been a few in each episode. We've seen a particular scene where it seems like there's some puppetry going on. And it leads you to believe that there's maybe two puppets, but I feel like maybe there's one person pulling some strings. We don't know who it is. It sounds like I think it was a female's voice. So I'm wondering if that's end of world. I wonder, because it sounds like they're supervising what's happening. But the story structure, from a very basic guess, is that this person or entity, end of world, is sending letters that somehow got to this school council that predicted things, sort of like the Dead Sea Scrolls, that predicted things that will happen, such as this going into a tree and a spiral staircase comes out with a platform and a floating castle, and the power of Dios. Like, it sounds like they're all receiving these, what is it, like one-way written letters, and they're wondering if Utena has received them as well. And I would say at this point, we really don't know. But what if this person is just this puppet master that maybe is just a childish figure, is the perception they're giving currently. But it might not be. That might just be a different story angle that our listeners, rather, who have already seen this series are definitely know the answer.
So, right. That's part of the fun, I think, that we're all here for, is for somebody like you who's not seen this to give us your theories so that we can sit here silently and be like, wow, Jared is astute and really knows just from this little information exactly yes. how this is supposed to go. Or, my, how off the mark he is. This is quaint. I love this. Mm. It's a fun blend, I will say. You have you're very observant. You're very paying a lot of attention to the show, which as a fan, I enjoy.
Four notes, and they only say "smash the world's shell," "letters from end of world," "revolution to the world by winning duels," and "code of the rose seal." Those are the. Mm-hmm. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
Yeah,
that's Utena in a tight little bow. So. This is going to be a little wonky here, but we'd forgotten the step here, which was to talk about who's behind the scenes of this episode.
Sure.
We have some returning crew here for this episode, For Whom the Rose Smiles, storyboarded and directed by Shingo Kaneko. He is new. You might have seen some work he has done. He did the original TV series for Full Metal Alchemist. He was a director there. Went on to do Laid Back Camp, which is a great little slice of life anime about some girls in a school club that's all about camping. It's wonderful. Went on to Ouran High Host Club, which has some similar themes with this that happens here, as well as Yurikuma Arashi, which is another Ikuhara show that I'd brought up before.
Yes.
Again, this episode written by Yoji Enokido. Animation supervisor was Hiroshi Nagahama, who was a director, actually, for Flowers of Evil, Fruits Basket, Jubei-chan 1 and 2, as well as Record of Lodoss War. I believe, Jared, did you watch Flowers of Evil? Is my remembering the correct show?
Oh, yes. Aku no Hana, Flowers of Evil.
Yes.
It was a very divisive anime that year that it came out. It was either at the top of people's anime of the year list or pretty much at the very bottom. It was quite a year. And as an animation supervisor, that's very interesting because it's a kind of controversial topic with that series. A lot of rotoscoping of actors, but a very interesting look and on top of a very moving series. Very interesting. It's funny that just to go back to Shingo Kaneko for a moment, when we talked about Ouran High School Host Club earlier, I think we did that off podcast for a moment. So there's a lot of these things, these moving flowers and title cards, and it kind of reminds me of what's that anime called? And you were able to pick it out. So yes, we can see some of these similarities shining through.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to episode 2, this will probably just be edited and moved around, so forgive me. We didn't talk much about the duel and what is happening up in the arena, besides some cursory stuff in the first episode. So Utena is fighting Sionji again here at this elevated, platform, the, arena in the back of the school. And I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the song that plays during the ascension, which we'll be very familiar with hearing it about 37 more times, which is a song called Absolute Destiny Apocalypse, which is an intense title, I would say. Just talking about the light of darkness and just going through
there quite a bit are a of lot of things. Lyrics that play throughout this song every time, and between watching the ascent to the platform and watching the cool animation with the stairs and stuff, I catch glimpses of these lyrics, and I'm just thinking that I'm definitely not in a church, so I'm not sure what is going on. But it's pretty
baptismal records and birth records and
right, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, it is indeed very serious. It is a game of life and death here in the duel, even though they do not fight to the death. It is just whoever can strike the rose off of the other's chest is declared the winner, and therefore the rose bride's husband, wife, well, however you want to put
however it. You want to look at it. I find when you said, well, we had kind of skipped over talking about the duel. Well, the duel is only maybe 30 seconds to a minute long, Whereas the rest of the episode is everything else happening with our student council and being at the dorm and kind of like building on those elements. When it comes to the duel itself, it's like such a build up moment, but then yes, it was nice to see, but it was kind of over quickly. It's really interesting that each duel we've seen so far hasn't really been, unless I'm seeing it wrong, that the highlight of the episode. The episode's really been about introducing everything else. But even in episode two, they're both playing around with real swords at that point. And the fighting is nice to see, but it doesn't seem to feel super serious, or like the level of what's at stake here is barely defined to you. So while Seonji is devastated that his rose has been destroyed from his pocket more than once, there's definitely a sense of how serious will this be. Like, you know, there's no blood, there's not much happening. I do remember Utena getting kicked or hit, and there's a really good voice acting line where it's like a really good that was really cool to see. It's like, okay, well, there's definitely physical pain here. It's not just they're just sparring. It's very much a real battle. But it ended so quickly. So that's kind of what stood out to me. I'm curious to see, you know, with anime, you never know. We had the prince, like the power of the prince or whoever that is, it was Dios or whatever, coming down from the castle and kind of embodying her and giving her an extra boost, it sounds like. It makes me curious as to how devastating can these battles be, and will we get some character deaths, and is this going to be out of nowhere? Is there going to be some interesting moments? So that's kind of what I'm thinking so far. But so it doesn't seem like it's really about these duels so far. It's more about what happens in relation to the duel with the characters outside of it.
It's very much kind of like everything is the reasoning and the buildup, and this is just kind of the release, you know, that everything's been building up to, and we're going to get through that, and then what matters is what happens after. What are the consequences of this? But I'm not sure if I've thought of this before, but the way you spoke of it made me consider something, and I think this show is open to a lot of interpretation where no one answer is correct and no one answer is entirely wrong. But you had brought up that the stakes are very low and there's not really a lot of injury that's happening, so how serious could this really be? But we're fed that it's very serious. We've got a character who's orchestrating this named End of the World. We have this song Absolute Destiny Apocalypse about how heavy all this stuff is. But thinking back, it's been a while for you and I, being in high school. Thinking back, all of the stakes in high school are incredibly low, and nothing really matters. But when you're inside of it, it's all that your life could be. Everything is so serious and dramatic and means so much. But really, on the outside, it doesn't. And I feel like that's kind of the feeling that I get from this, and that everybody treats it as the biggest deal. When really, it's like, okay, well, this is a game. And nothing super serious is at least going to happen for now.
Right. It definitely comes off that way currently, especially with the school council. They are very serious about this. They're the ones who are worried and involved, and they've been a part of whatever this is for a while, it sounds like. Whereas Utena just coming in, she's just been introduced to this, like we talked a few times now about that first episode. She just kind of, you know, brushes the dirt off her shoulder like that was strange, and doesn't realize what's happening yet. And I think that's very clearly done on purpose. I feel like as things keep progressing, I'm going to assume that as episodes keep unrolling here, that we're going to start to see more seriousness of what's actually happening. But for now, it's just it almost feels surface level. A lot of jargon just being thrown around that is important for you to hear, but none of this is really going to make sense until we kind of get some more reveals.
Absolutely. And I will say I'm very excited to continue on this journey on our metaphorical wagon, as we brought it before.
Oh man.
And what this journey holds. And I'm ready to cap this off, unless you have any final thoughts about these first two episodes and the start of your journey.
I just believe that I'm intrigued. I know that I am intrigued enough to want to keep watching more. I'm curious as to what's really happening here. I like seeing series that surprise me, that are original. And it can be tough nowadays, you know, with all different types of media. You know, one of the things I like to say, and I feel like it's true. If you've watched a decent amount of anime, you've seen a lot of what it has to offer as a medium, and nothing's really surprising anymore, which is mm-hmm. why, like, once in a while when a series comes out that has those moments that are like, you know, holy crap moments, and those things really get me. So I'm hoping to see some of that, and so far, just to see how these episodes have been directed, how they've been animated, the music, you know, that just kind of throws you off a little, and how oblivious Utena seems to be to what's happening, it definitely has me. So I'm excited to keep watching here. It sounds like in our next session we'll be watching three episodes because there's a two-parter. So I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch more. I wish I could just watch all of it right here, right now with you, but unfortunately that's not how life goes, and this podcast would go on for untold number of hours if we were to just go and start with a binge and do it start to finish. It'd be very difficult. Yeah. But good. I'm looking forward to it. It should be good. And I thank you, Jared, for your time, and I'm excited.
Yeah, no, thank you for putting together all of these amazing notes for us and doing the legwork to get this show set up. It's been a long time since we've done a podcast, and I didn't even have a decent microphone for this, which you so kindly sent to me by our U.S. mail. So,
yes.
And it's very much appreciated to get this going and get this set up again. It's just, it feels like old times.
It does. It feels like no time has passed at all, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank everybody here who listened. Thank you for listening. This is only the beginning. We have so much more for you. If you're coming into the show after we're done, guess what? You can binge it. You can binge all these wonderful episodes of this podcast of Jared and I. And you should have a good time. I hope so anyway. It'll be a good time and bring you much joy. Thank you to any sponsors, if we have any ads that go on here. Jared, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Well, Randy, what I've been having going on is called Hot Anime Vlogger. I am Hot Anime Vlogger.
You are?
Yes, and you can find me through Twitter and Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. That's pretty much it. But I've been posting some videos, mostly a lot of some older stuff I had recorded as my persona, Hot Anime Vlogger, where I go to conventions or other events and basically just cover them with a little fun tone as we, you know, go through things, but really that's what I've got. What about you?
Well, I'm also on the internet at places. You can find me on Twitter at @Saber_Breaker, and I suppose I would plug something I've already brought up on the show before, but I'll say it again. My other podcast, We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z, that I do with my buddy Doug. You can find him at Drabaz, Drabaz, on Twitter and TikTok. Good guy, makes AMVs, look him up on YouTube, does a lot of great stuff. But yeah, we talk about Dragon Ball, anything and everything, talk about fights, goofs, and what have you. And yeah, on my Twitter, I post art, I draw stuff, so you can check that out, and that should be fun. But yeah, again, thank you guys for listening. Please subscribe to the show, tell your friends, have them like, comment, and subscribe, post a review. It helps out a lot. And, you know, if you're listening to this in the future, hopefully this doesn't matter a lick to you, but if you're listening to us in the here and now, do us all a favor, get vaccinated, do yourself a favor, be healthy, get vaccinated, and have a good time. Thank you again, and check you next time. Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.